When your ideal customer's kids are begging every night to read your book, you've won. At Dinosaur House, we turn industry leaders into kids' book authors. We don't do it because it's a super fun thing to do, although it is. We do it because it's highly strategic. Imagine if every night your customers are being asked by their kids to read a book that your company made. Talk about brand affinity. You're helping your customers connect deeply with the most important thing in their lives, their kids, over something that they are passionate about that has to do with your industry. If you want to have a conversation with us about how your brand could become the author of a kid's book, just hit us up, dinosaurhouse.com. Hit the little button that says schedule a story design call. And we'll have a jam session together on just what your company's kids book could and should be.
Hey, everybody. This is Monik Suri. I'm the founder and CEO of Therma. We're building the world's first smart cold chain, trying to help protect our food, our health, and our planet. It's great to be here on the Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur.
What's up, Purpose-Driven Entrepreneurs? It's me, your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Monik Suri. Monik, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
It's a pleasure. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk to you. So just to give our listeners some context, I mean, I just heard you say you're building the first, how did you describe it?
Smart cold chain, the first smart refrigeration platform.
Yeah, what does that mean, a smart refrigeration platform?
Yeah, it's one of these interesting areas of the world that most people don't think about because it's everywhere and it's been going around for so long. Refrigeration, as one expert put it, is ubiquitous. It's something we take for granted in much of the developed world. But the cold chain or the refrigeration supply chain moves $1 trillion worth of product across food, pharma, and data every year. And a lot of that cold chain, a lot of that infrastructure is old, outdated, and in many cases, in many parts of the world, doesn't exist. And that's something we're trying to solve by building better technologies to make refrigeration and the product that refrigeration holds both safer and more sustainable. And that's really where we talk about smart cold chain.
Yeah. When did you start the company and what made you decide that this is what you wanted to build?
Absolutely. We started working on Therma 2 years ago. And I've been interested in and working on technology entrepreneurship for around a decade. I got interested in cold chain, working on a previous platform called CoInspect, Collaborative Inspect, which was a compliance tech play focused around safety, trying to make products safer and healthier in the food supply chain. And as we scaled that product, we realized there was an even bigger opportunity around refrigeration, which is obviously important for safety when you think about food and other perishables, but also even more so important for climate. And that was something we learned working on CoInspect. We realized, wow, this refrigeration problem is actually not just about perishables and about safety, but refrigeration is responsible for around 8% of all global warming. And that is something that I didn't know. And that really got me interested in and focused around how do we make this better, more efficient, and more sustainable.
What's been the most challenging thing about either starting, growing, or running this company?
So many things. The most challenging.
And you can get niche here. You don't have to give me a broad answer. I'd be curious just to know what's an example of a really hard problem that you've had to figure out how to solve?
Yeah, I think a really hard problem, that we come across a lot is how do you get people to care about something that they take for granted and don't think about? How do you get people to really focus on a problem that they may not even realize is a problem? That's something we come across in a lot of the industries we work with, where people have been doing work in a certain way for like 30 plus years, 40 years. Yeah.
Is it because the customers, like the potential customers of your product, this is something that they are not trying to change?
Oftentimes they're not even aware that they have a problem. They don't realize how significant the waste and the inefficiency across product and energy and refrigerants is. So they just assume, well, we're doing things fine. Why do we need to upgrade? And so a lot of it's about getting people to realize, wow, you've got a huge amount of waste and a lot of savings that you could put back in your pocket.
Yeah. How have you gone about solving the problem of them not caring or not realizing?
A lot of it is storytelling. I spent a lot of time telling stories. I think the kind of core, purpose of marketing in many ways is to tell stories. Our product marketing team, our design team, even our sales team really are often celebrating successes, highlighting case studies, whether that's a McDonald's owner that saved $10,000 of inventory during a storm, or a Marriott hotel that saved tens of thousands of dollars during a power outage, or a small mom and pop pizzeria that saved a weekend worth of inventory. Those are the kinds of things that really resonate with a potential partner, potential customer, hearing about how a problem was solved. And we do that across our team. I spend a lot of time doing that with investors and strategic partners, getting them to understand, hey, you think climate change is a problem? Well, did you know that nearly 10% of it is because of cooling? Most investors don't know that. Most entrepreneurs who work in sustainability don't know that. And I think that's one of those like really interesting opportunities where you can story tell. I'm speaking at the New York Times stage tomorrow for the COP26 summit in Glasgow. And, big event, global leaders. No one else aside from myself and my co-founder are speaking about cooling in the context of climate change. And there's a lot of interesting people there. Folks like John Kerry, Tom Friedman, lots of fascinating public intellectuals. But cooling is kind of underappreciated as a climate driver. And so both at a micro level with a customer or potential customer, and at a more macro level with a potential investor or partner or recruit, we're often just trying to celebrate and tell the potential impact of solutions like ours.
What's been the most, either like the best piece of advice that you've ever gotten on the practicality of how you tell good stories? So like storytelling is ultimately what your marketing is and how you're getting investors. Either the biggest breakthrough discovery that you've made about how to be a good storyteller or the best piece of advice that you've put in practice?
So many things I've learned over the years. And I think one of the most powerful is, it's kind of often said, but it really resonates, which is to speak from the heart. And I think as someone who often speaks from the brain or thinks from the brain, I have kind of learned more and more that the power of a story lies in connecting to the other person, the listener's lived experience. And so overwhelming the listener with statistics, with data points, is not nearly as effective as describing a personal moment where an insight landed or was revealed, or describing another person in the world who might be like the listener, who had a similar challenge or a similar solution that came. And that kind of personal aspect to storytelling is really, I think, what's at the heart of like speaking from the heart or telling stories from the heart. It's not about data and about overwhelming with knowledge. It's about connecting to the lived experience, both that I've had and that the listener might be having. And that's a new thing for me. I went to college at Harvard and law school at Harvard, and I worked in the White House as a junior guy doing economic policy. I worked in a big hedge fund in a finance role. Most of my 20s and early 30s, I was in a very thinking-oriented mindset about my career. And, this is one of those, I think, learnings as an entrepreneur. It's not just true of marketing and fundraising. It's true of every single thing, recruiting, inspiring, connecting with the team. It's all about really personalizing the insight.
Yeah. I struggle with the same thing, because very much like for me, strategy is the top. Like, I'm just always thinking about the strategy behind everything and how, this is going to lead to this. And so when I'm having a sales conversation or trying to, put a post together or something like that, so often my focus is just about like, why will this drive this and lead to this? And what resonates so much more with people, like in sales conversations, are like reactions from people's kids, because I produce kids books, so it's like reactions from people's kids about, you know, like the fact that we made a kids book where Dan, our one of our customers, he runs a he's a marketer influencer, and his kids book was, I want to be a marketer when I grow up. And the reason he wanted to do this kids book is because his kids are not interested in what he does for a living. And now they are, because the book is done and his kids are like, it's one of their favorite books. They laugh, and it literally gives him the opportunity to talk about what he does for a living. Like, telling that story is so much more impactful than talking about how that's going to drive result. Like, incorporating that book into the sales process of his company is going to drive, you know, sales results. Although that's what personally I tend to be more like, I gravitate more towards that because I'm so strategy focused. So I feel like I can relate to that.
That's a terrific, I think, story, not to use the, not no pun intended. I think it speaks also to this other theme, you know, kind of a famous management principle or axiom, culture eats strategy for breakfast. You know, yeah. There's a kind of a different angle on this, but, you know, there's a kind of way in which the way people experience their work and each other in an organization is even more important than the kind of strategic angles or the tactical execution. And so, yeah.
It almost feels like it's one of my greatest weaknesses as a, like a founder, CEO, is the fact that I tend to be so focused on strategy. Like, it's the reason I was able to build a company that has customers, but it also feels like my greatest weakness that I'm just constantly so focused on strategy. And I don't tend to think about the stuff that attracts people to want to work here or be a customer and that kind of stuff. And I wanted to ask you another practical question, and that's just like, how do you go about getting the right kind of stories to tell? And then, like, practically, how do you tell them as a company?
Yeah, I think that's both really, I think, important questions to, you know, to kind of grapple with if you're an entrepreneur or thinking about being an entrepreneur. The best way I've found to tell effective stories and to really resonate with listeners is to start by listening a ton. And, you know, people speak and write about the importance of listening to your customer, listening to the market. So much of what we've learned in building Therma was by listening to users and customers working on our original product, the first platform we built, which was called CoInspect, Collaborative Inspect. And it was in the process of spending several years talking to restaurant owner operators, supermarket and convenience store chains, grocery, food service, food distribution. All of these customers, we had over 5,000 locations using CoInspect, talking to and listening to, especially users and customers, is how we discovered how many challenges they were having around inventory, around product spoilage, around food waste, much of which had to do with managing refrigeration. And the fact that they were using manual process, paper and pen clipboards, and walking around checking stuff 4 to 8 times a day, that's how we figured out there was an opportunity to build an automation or a sensor-based solution. And that's what led to temperature, humidity, energy, remote monitoring application, or Therma, as we call her. And so that's how Therma was born, from listening to customers. And a lot of the stories and the success, you know, the case studies we've had and we've been able to market effectively around have come from talking to our users as we've kind of scaled Therma. We've got almost 6,000 sensors in the world now. And we've realized that the best way to tell a story is to learn and listen to how, you know, the world is unfolding and how a product or a solution is affecting the user. And so that's really been central to our ability to market the success of Therma. It's helped us learn about the sustainability impact and the potential impact that refrigeration and smart cooling can have. That's often come as well, Timmy, from listening. And there I think there's a kind of continuous learning model to startups where you're always in learning mode. And so, you know, even though I finished grad school almost 10 years ago, I spent a lot of time in the last 2 years learning about climate change and cooling and the relationship between cooling technologies and the growth of the cold chain and some of the emissions that are coming from energy waste and product waste and refrigerants. And so that allowed us to tell better stories because we realized, wow, if refrigerants are leaking out of refrigeration and those could be prevented, and those are responsible for several percent of all global warming, that's powerful. And that allows us to then tell a story about, well, when we can solve for this by catching equipment downtime, we can make a dent on warming, especially at scale. So I think a lot of our best stories have come from first listening and then learning.
Yeah. I like, so thinking about the concept of just like listening to your customers or listening to your potential customers. When I worked at the company that I worked at before I started this one, I worked at a podcast production company called Sweetfish. And one of my jobs was on their podcast, B2B Growth. I would ask the people we featured on the show were matches to our ideal customer profile. And so like I got the chance to ask them what it is that they care about, what it is that they're worried about, what it is that they're stressed about, all that kind of stuff. And we use that data so that we could tell better stories and like do more effective LinkedIn posts and that sort of thing. And it just dawned on me that I haven't applied that within my own business on this podcast. So I'd love to ask you this. You'd be the first person I'm asking this question, but it's a question I've asked a lot to VPs of marketing on B2B growth. And that is, what is the biggest thing for you as running your company, or just as a leader of a company, what is the biggest thing that you are either focused on right now or trying to get better at or frustrated with?
Yeah, I think maybe the biggest thing I'm focused on is making sure we're working on the most ambitious problem in the most ambitious way. You know, I think time is our most finite resource. It's the thing we can least scale. Other things we can scale often, you know, you can raise more capital, you can recruit more talented colleagues, but time is really the one, you know, great equalizer in many ways. And I think making sure that one is spending one's life energy on problems that are really worthwhile and that matter enough, and solving for those problems in the most ambitious and meaningful way. That's, I think, where I focus most of my time, at least in terms of what's on my mind.
Well, it's a good segue into the main question that I ask on this show. So I started this podcast as a way to ask purpose-driven entrepreneurs what it is they're really living their life for. So when you think about what it is you're really living your life for, or what do you want to be remembered for when you die, that those sorts of questions, what jumps out to you?
Yeah, I find, you know, as I get older, I spend more and more time listening to and talking to my grandmother, my father, some of my great aunts and uncles, the kind of older generations in the family. And one of the things that I've been reflecting on is we have a long history, a long tradition of service in our family. And, you know, both of my grandfathers were in the army and India. Most of my extended family was, all of my grandmother's brothers were. Even my mom's mom, my grandmother, was in the military. She was a doctor, and she was one of the first female physicians in India. And my parents are both physicians. My wife is a doctor, my brother. There's a lot of orientation around service, whether it's in public service or in healthcare. And I think that is something that I want to embody in my role as an entrepreneur. I love being a builder and I love creating things. I never wanted to be a doctor, really. I never wanted to go into healthcare. I studied pre-med for, you know, a couple of months in college and quickly switched majors to political science and economics. But I think, you know, it's much more about what can you achieve by actually building new stuff or solving old problems in new ways. And for me, the mark of success is really how much impact can I have on the lives of others to better them. And I think that when I think about the orientation around service, it comes back to, okay, is this really making people's lives better? How do you measure that? Do you feel good about that? And can you kind of sleep easily knowing that's happening? And that's how I got into tech. I got into tech originally to work on compliance and regulation, because those were areas around law and government that were not being worked on by a lot of engineers and a lot of technologists. And I thought that was a gap. That's how I got started building CoInspect, and you know, I transitioned from compliance into climate because you know both because the problem was looming much larger. You know, the kind of climate crisis that we're living through began to become a lot more evident to me, at least, and I think to many others. I didn't realize how immediate a problem it was when I was younger, and now it's like staring us in the face. And also because I think it's one of those problems that, you know, if one can work on, you can really help, you know, improve, you know, the lived experience for the next generation. I just had a daughter, my first kid, she's 4 months old. And I think more and more about, well, what do I want to leave behind in terms of service and impact? And I think it's one way of measuring it is, you know, is the world she's growing up in at least as fulfilling, if not more so, than the world I was fortunate enough, privileged enough to get to experience. And so that's where the, you know, the personal side of sustainability and climate change comes in. I want her to be able to go to Delhi in India, New Delhi is the capital, that's where my grandparents are from, and be able to breathe the air, which is something that's hard to do right now because the air is not easy to breathe. I want her to be able to go snorkeling and see coral reefs. And that's getting harder and harder to do because, you know, reefs are getting destroyed because of a number of effects, one of which is the warming temperature in the water. And I want to be able to have a summer in California, not worried about wildfires, and want to be able to go skiing with her in Tahoe and not worry about mudslides. And, you know, just so many other things that make this kind of problem very personal. So, yeah, yeah. That's what motivates me to wake up early and sleep late.
Yeah, that's a great segue into my next question too, which is I have two for fun questions that I want to ask you. So the sure. First one is, I'm a kids book author. I believe that part of leaving a legacy is reaching kids. What's a topic or idea you'd make a kids book about if you could?
I love that question. I've been reading a lot of kids books recently, Timmy, many more in the last 4 months than I'd ever read. I think probably until, you know, since I was a kid, you know, I think a love for the world in the broadest sense is a topic I really, you know, I really value and believe kids can develop an early instinct around, whether that's a love for animals, a love for nature in general, and broadly construed, a love for all the differences out there in the world, the fact that there are tall mountains and shallow reefs and everything in between. So I think, you know, I'd love to write or work on a book around developing and fostering a love of the planet and the broader world.
Yeah, what do you think the impact would be if a book like that existed?
I mean, there are a lot of books like that out there. I think there could be more. What I see is, you know, we read, my wife and I, a lot of books to our daughter, Arya, around animals, around nature, hoping that she'll develop a love for the beauty and the wonder and the diversity of the natural world, and that she'll realize that, you know, we're just one part of a broader ecosystem, and that might lead her to, you know, shape some of her choices to be thoughtful and considerate of the broader impact that her actions have. It's very hard to do, and we struggle to do that, but I'm hoping that she'll do better and that we'll, you know, have a chance to give her more awareness, more consciousness around those kinds of issues.
That's awesome. Okay, Monica, I've got one last for fun question for you. What is something that you currently suck at that a year from now you want to be great at?
I would, yeah, that's such thoughtful questions to
one of my favorite questions to ask.
These are hard questions. I'm pretty bad at what I would say, communicating with sign language and using symbols and gestures. You know, it's something I, again, being super cerebral, being really in my head all the time. I've started to realize there's a lot of power in body language, and whether it's with kids or with, you know, with grownups, I think we can communicate a lot. I joke, Timmy, with my friends that I talk a lot. And you know, that's how I get my ideas out there, but I'm trying to work on, listening more instead of speaking, and allowing my body language and signs to do the speaking for me instead of having to use my words, which is ironic since I'm on a pod today. But I think that's, you know, that's something I certainly think I could get better at, listening and then internalizing what the other is saying. And I'm learning this really from my daughter. You know, she's always taking in what I'm doing or not doing, what I'm saying or not saying. And I'm trying to get better at creating silence and space and letting my body do more of the talking instead of my words.
It's so funny because I remember being in high school, I was so concerned about the question of like, what makes somebody cool? Like what makes somebody, somebody that everybody wants to hear from? And I remember I got so focused. I'm a performer by nature. I want to get up in front of people and entertain them and be the most interesting person that I can be and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't until I was in my late 20s working at Sweetfish, meeting and really getting to know my now best friend, James Carberry, who was the founder of Sweetfish, and understanding the ultimate charisma superpower is curiosity. If you're the most curious person, it's so easy to become the person that everybody wants to get to know. And so just getting really good in conversations at having the other person do the majority of the talking was like an ultimate charisma superpower that I wish I could have told my high school self.
It's so well said. It's so well said. My wife's a really good listener, which is probably part of the reason why we've been together 20 years since I love to talk. But I watch her with our daughter just kind of listening and looking at her and not saying anything. And in the silence, you know, the little one just starts opening up and saying things and verbalizing. And the first few times I was like just amazed by that because, you know, I tended to kind of make noises and talk more. And now I've tried to kind of, you know, imitate that. And it's kind of incredible when you kind of create that space, kids just want to open up and say stuff and, you know, let you know. I think that's true of adults too. So it's really well said. Curiosity is the ultimate superpower.
Yeah. If you haven't already, you should start a podcast. And this is not me pitching Sweetfish. I don't work there anymore. But this has been the ultimate way for me to flex the muscle of like I find myself doing it in every conversation now where I'll think, okay, I just asked a what question. So now I'm going to ask a why question. Okay, now I asked a what and a why question. So now I'm going to ask a how question. And like the mechanics of getting the other person to feel like getting the other person to do the majority of the talking and feel like they're genuinely, the other person's taking a genuine interest in them.
That's a great plug for starting a pod. I'll return that with a plug, which is we at Therma have a community of thought leaders and you know thinker doers that we've been trying to celebrate called 0.01, okay. Which is you know kind of speaks to the need for you know thousands of innovators to work on sustainability and global warming. And 0.01 is you know the chance of any one of them becoming an outsized success. The reality is we need many, many, many thousands working on this problem. And we do host conversations through the 0.01 platform with public intellectuals, entrepreneurs, investors, activists working on climate technology and innovation. So I've just been working on that with Aaron, my co-founder, for the last year and a half. But so much of what you say to me about like, learning from listening and from asking questions, I feel like I've learned much more in those conversations than when I'm on the other side. So if you're interested in Therma, in cooling, in climate change and technology to help address it, check us out, hellotherma.com. We are building our team, raising capital. We're venture backed. We're based in the Bay Area. But this is a real pleasure to join conversations like this with people who are thinking about purpose-driven entrepreneurship, not just building stuff for building's sake.
Yeah, love it. Monik, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. This has been super fun. Where are you most active on social media?
Yeah, we're on Twitter and LinkedIn on Hello Therma on both.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Great to be here. Have a great day. Thanks.